rather interesting. We talked about the pastor getting around today in his automobiles, and I asked whether or not you had a car, and you said yes. That's striking.
Model T.
Model T.
Yeah. I already in Bertrand had a car because I had the charge of the three congregations, and I had to drive 80 miles every Sunday, and practically every Sunday. We went to Maple Grove, which is 22 miles, and then 14 miles south to Venice, and then 28 miles home. Besides calling on the sick, see, during the week I was occupied with my school, so I had to take this opportunity and call on the sick when I was at Venice and Maple Grove.
Yeah.
And I often would go Saturday and then have Sunday school, have the children for the afternoon, and stay with Pastor Reckley, who was a member of the Wisconsin Center Church, or would stay with some of the members of our congregation. I would stay overnight.
So you found a car almost a matter of necessity more than even a convenience, huh?
Correct. At the time, a Model T. I had quite a number of experiences with that first car.
What kind of experiences?
Well, when my brother Martin took me to Maple Grove and took the car along, and there was a noise in the back seat, I felt, and I said to Brother Martin, I said, "What about that noise?" He said, "Oh, we can't stop every time this rattle car makes a noise." So on Sunday morning, I went to Venice, and returning, I turned the corner, and there was new gravel. All of a sudden, I was sitting back, and here my wheel was going ahead. The back wheel had come over, because this cotter pin, see.
Fell off
and this was a noise. This was a noise, and I was so fortunate I was not going about 40 miles. You had no speedometer.
Well, there was no
Model T. You could always tell by the noise. So, fortunately, the first man that I married, where I officiated, he followed me, and he found the cotter pin, and we put that car back, the wheel back on the car, and put the cotter pin in, and everything was okey-dokey.
You almost had to be your own mechanic then, too, I suppose, when you ran those cars.
Well, when I picked up those murderers and killed the man in the Pontiac, and I was attending the convention in Saginaw, and then finally I got to a place, here was a car in the ditch, and there were about five, six cars on the road, wondering what happened. It was next to me, the urban car that used to run between Saginaw and Dave City, and then everybody moved away except I was the last one. So these three men, each one with a .32, and I took them into my car, and I had a short circuit.
Oh, boy.
And I went up about a half a mile to one of my members. This was about 4 miles from Bertrand. And he took care of my car once before. And he came down, and here, this hood, you know, they used to come down. And a wire was exposed. That caused the short circuit. See, I couldn't get my car started, which was a blessing in disguise.
Right.
In the meantime, the three men who had killed a man in a brawl in a saloon in the Pontiac that morning at 2 o'clock, took in the herb and went into Canada, and later on I was called as a witness to testify, and they were a number of men, and this one young man, the lawyer, he was bound to have a say that this was the guilty party. I says, no, he and a fellow by the name of Brody now also witnessed. So this is the experiences I had with my car.
With your car. I suppose you were among the fortunate few at that time, though, to own a car, huh?
And then here in base, here at Amaleth, my first funeral, and they just had put in shale.
Oh.
So this was about a foot high in the center. And I was only drive the first funeral I had here at Amaleth. I was only supposed to drive 15 miles. And the old Model T, as soon as you get out of 15, and go chuck, chuck, chuck. And all of a sudden, the thing stopped. And the whole proceedings are back to be about 20 cars. One go this way, one for this way. And then about half a year later, we had a conference here in Atlanta. And while we were in church, some fellow goes into my house and robs me of my Sunday pay.
No.
And then one of the ladies here owned the store. He said, "That's what we have snake knots on us. We don't want to have it said that our pastor was robbed." This was news at the time, because very few people were robbed.
They did.
And
crime was very low then, huh?
Well, this, in this day and age, my goodness, this is not news anymore.
Yeah, right.
It's every day.
Yeah.
But in that day and age, and after a while, the children's banks, they were popping the deal over there. Somebody had tried them over, mm-hmm. took all the money, they were foreign, and threw them in, and my, out of my trousers, they had taken, they had not only their trousers, they were underneath the porch. My wife said, but in all the world. And this happened during the service.
During Sunday morning, the service?
No, the evening.
Well, Sunday evening.
We had the conference. We were, and the ministers were here. They were here at Amalfi. They always had a service there in connection with the conference.
Oh, I see.
They, all the people, pastors went to communion, and some of the local people.
Mm-hmm.
So this lady said, we are not going to have so that our pastor was wrong. Said, what did they do?
Mm-hmm.
This was the result. I got this coming. Enough money for a Pontiac car.
For a Pontiac,
which was the first two-tone car in Bay County.
Oh, it was?
The first two-tone. It was dark green and black. You could not even tell.
Yeah, that's right. The old Model Ts were all black, weren't they?
They were just, everything was black.
Yeah.
And then after a while, the two-tone cars came. And people paid $40 extra for a car.
To have a two-tone.
That two-tone.
Isn't this something?
And then there was something like $9 left. And we had a meeting, and then one fella said, who's going to get the $90? We looked in the treasury, and one fella got up. He said, I gave my $20 for minister's car.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to have the minister. And so he made a motion, and I got the $90 for
sex. In addition, isn't that, that was pretty nice, wasn't it?
And our Amalfi people used to pinch their pennies.
Did they?
They were so, what should I say, Fry gave the generous.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm always thinking both ways, but because they, everything was done in German.
Oh, right.
Everything was done in German. And so I had finally, in a fashion, mastered the German, and all of a sudden I had to do my work in English. See, that's why I didn't want to get away. In Bertrand, I had English.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, but that's why I hesitated accepting the call.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'd get away from it.
So that the language that most of the people spoke around here was German then.
Even when they played ball.
Even when they played ball.
They played ball out there, they German, in Nowski, Sekaldin, all the concert.
Was English spoken at all? Or
oh, they spoke English, yes. So. Yes, in a fashion.
In a fashion.
Yeah. But when I got into the homes, I didn't know people. I didn't think. Even today,
mm-hmm.
yesterday I called them 18 people at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And, you're a lady.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you're correct. Okay. Well, I said, she kept the choice.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so happy that I mentioned some of the little hymns and the little prayers.
Yeah.
With her.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Oh, this is a great help that I need. Because every once in a while I find someone who wouldn't understand some of these Latvians that are still Latvians.
Oh, yeah. When did you find that English became, let's say, more of the spoken language than the German? Was there a period of time and perceived a change, or did it come overnight, or gradually?
Gradually.
Huh?
Yeah, gradually, and then for a while they would sing German and sing English, the same service.
In the same service.
Anyone who wanted to sing German, then that was the... Oh, that didn't work at all.
Uh-huh.
Because finally the Germans, they would sing aloud, you know, and then a few English, they
began to be real rivalry between the two languages. Huh?
But the melody was the same, but outside of that, it didn't work so well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would especially in the funeral, conducted in German, and then I would have an English and a sermon, and the German would be about 20. Back at also the memorial wreaths, they were not as plentiful as they are today.
Mm-hmm.
That day and age, people, it was the beginning of what they call the Mindy Crunch.
What's that?
Mindy Crunch, memorial wreaths.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen how early the papers were, mm-hmm. they spoke about the Mindy Crunch, the meeting of the saints, instead of spending so much money on flowers, they finally, some people give $1 and $2 were for fall that they would not give anything, or maybe give $5, $6 for flowers.
Mm-hmm.
So we had flowers all in front of the altar, and gradually the people gave friends. I think it was a good idea. Pastor Krieger, who was the president of the Ohio district, and at one time the president of the Party of Fort Wayne,
mm-hmm.
who is now at Zurich Lake, Lake Zurich, near Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
My fact that the only classmate that's still active is
Right.
And his wife just died.
Mm-hmm.
I had two long letters from this man.
Mm-hmm.
We were all very and they gave $3,000 former members of Akron, Ohio, Carl and the Sanders in Florida. So this congregation, because he was down there about half a year, and she couldn't take him because of her lung condition, I guess.
It's a memorial museum where something that the Germans probably began, is this?
Correct.
It is.
Mendikrans, it was called. Well, I wouldn't say the Germans are the start of it, but it was the beginning. Well, it was called both. See, when I taught school, there were more ministers teaching than actual teachers in the service. And then, during my teaching, changed over that there were more teachers. And that included both lady and teachers. It was a foregone conclusion when you would accept a call to a congregation and they were not strong enough financially to support two men, the minister had to teach.
You bring up an interesting subject here, too, where I think most people recognize that with almost every Lutheran church in the area, there's also a school that goes in connection with it.
Correct.
Why is that? Why does every Lutheran church seem to have a school, or at least a great majority of them do?
Well, you take the beginning of our American history, we had broken schools before we had
public schools.
Public schools. And you take, for a number of years, there were only private schools conducted and supported by individuals and congregations, and then gradually the public schools started. You read the history of
Pastor. We were talking about the Lutheran schools.
Well, we had where the teacher would take the little children in the morning to the public school, and in the afternoon he would take the upper grades. And we had the same arrangement where the public and the parochial school always worked hand in hand, where one teacher would teach religion in the morning with the upper grades, and in the afternoon with the lower grades. And they had the same arrangement here in Amalith, and we had two rooms in one of the same building.
Oh.
And in one room they had the public school teacher, and the other room they had the parochial school teacher.
Were these schools then usually the ones that we still find today as being right next door to the churches then, or?
At the time then, of course, this happened to be next to the church. And after a while it was divided that one school was built out here and one school was built south, and now it's consolidated again. We have the school in one place.
Yeah.
Where formerly we had, in Frankenwood they had nine schools. At what we call the central school, where we had three teachers, and then they had six other schools where the teacher would have from the first to the eighth grade.
Oh.
And what we call the Northwest, the Northeast, the South, the East School, the North School.
And these were cooperative adventures.
They were all members of the Franklin Church. They had nine teachers at that time. Pastor Ziley, our president, maybe you heard of him already. His father was a teacher in Franklin.
I see. And then they had this arrangement where half of the day was
correct.
Public school teaching, and then the remainder was parochial school.
And then finally a protest came from different people that this arrangement had to stop. But up until that time, the parochial schools in these localities really were the schools.
They were.
Yes, they were the leading schools, and the others were why they had fit in, and it helped the congregation that state paid for part of that.
Well, they did.
Yeah, foundation.
And then was it mainly the Lutheran pastor of the church then that taught the schools?
These were smaller schools and larger schools.
Yes.
Well, frankly, they had 9 teachers besides having 2 pastors. Well, this was a big church. But then you take Saginaw, Franklin College, Franklin Hill. Franklin Hill, they also had this arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have that in every place.
They didn't.
But they had it here at Amalek, they had it at Frankenlust, they had it at Frankenmuth, they had it at Richville. And as far as I know, only a few outstate, I would call it outstate, in Michigan had this arrangement.
Mm. And then the pastor was not only pastor of the church, but then he was in some cases also teacher at the school.
Yes. Well, when I entered the ministry, there were more pastors teaching. Higher Senate, as I mentioned before, that actually was teaching. Yeah. And only men teachers, only male teachers.
Only male, there were no women.
And gradually the congregation was called, like our president, Schindler of Amalek, said, the salvation of our schools is the Catholic arrangement of having sisters.
Oh.
And, take Pastor Losey, Teacher Losey, who was teaching here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Who is now in Wisconsin, has 7 teachers beside himself, all ladies. He's the principal. Celebrating his 35th Sunday, I wrote to him.
Were the public school teachers then mainly male teachers also? Or?
Also male teachers. That is in the early beginning, later on than the ladies.
Then the ladies came
along. They took over sooner than they did in our local school.
They did?
Oh, yeah.
Pastor Bickel, I know that in the many years that you've been living here, you probably have some rather fond memories of certain things, maybe people or events or times. Are there any that just automatically kind of pop into your mind as being rather fond and special memories of you?
Due to the fact that my message is from Franklin Trost and I'm from Franklin Youth, so it was not necessary for us to take long vacations. I would take my vacations in the garden, take off a half a day and plow the garden and work the garden after a while, look at the flowers that are raised.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally, when the boys grew up and went to college and seminary and were called to Canada, 4 of the boys went to Canada due to the fact that they knew the German language and, for that matter, other languages. So we decided to go to the Peace River Valley, which is northwest of Edmonton, about 300 miles, and called on son Adol, who was going to be married, and he took us into a little shed where he had lived, where the mice had full open parties. And so while we were up there, he went to a cabin, which was a very modest cabin. And my 2 sisters-in-law were along, and this was our first vacation after being in the ministry close to about 30 years.
Really?
Yes.
Otherwise, your vacations were spent probably pretty much at home.
My first vacation I took to Iowa, where Brother Ernst was teacher, and when I got there, and this was back in 1922, and I went to Iowa, which is near Hemlock. When I got there, Brother Ernst said, "Listen, I promised the neighbor to shock the oats." He said, "Why not you and I shock in the morning, and that would make a day? Or one man in the afternoon, we can celebrate."
Isn't that something?
And we shocked in the morning, and it was thistles left and right. In the afternoon, we picked out all the... that was my first vacation. So, as far as here, oh, there are a number of things that I could... spur of the moment, I would be able to make.
Well,
but this was fun. We enjoyed going to Canada that time.
Have you ever been up in northern Michigan at all?
Where is this?
In northern Michigan at all?
Oh, yeah. We used to go up to northern Michigan and go to Duluth.
But you never really had much of an opportunity to travel there, you said.
Later on, I went to Canada a few times. But it was teaching school, and it was not done. Mm-hmm. Simply people, even the pastors and teachers, they would take vacation because either missus or they were from other places, and it was natural they would want to see their parents.
Oh, right.
I was fortunate in that respect that I didn't
have a lot of time traveling.
Time. Yeah. I wouldn't say that I would take a vacation. I would go out in my garden. Mm-hmm.
But that's really not what people today consider vacation, where they pack up and leave and travel for who knows how long just to get away from things.
And as far as taking recreation, I always felt gardening was about as
recreational as you can get, huh?
Yeah. Golfing a few times, I wouldn't say that I didn't do golfing at all, but it was limited because it was time robbing.
Yeah. Probably about in the 20s, wasn't baseball beginning to catch on pretty much? I think Detroit.
Well,
had baseball,
that part, I was always a great baseball fan.
Were you?
Even to this very day.
Uh-huh.
I have to keep up baseball in order to talk the language of the grandchildren.
Yes.
You've got to stay on common grounds with your children. That's one thing they like, and you talk about history or something, well, they just listen to what you talk. But when you talk their language, then they are interested.
So I suppose even in the 20s, people around you were pretty much interested in baseball.
Oh,
right,
they were interested in their Tigers.
They were, huh?
Already at college.
How did they follow along with the games? Did they have radios at that time? Or
My first radio experience was at Bertrand, the neighbor. Had a radio, and I would go over there and listen. On our Saturday afternoon, that was the one game. But at the beginning, they didn't have the games on radio.
Well, they didn't.
No, they didn't. And later on, they had it on Saturday, and then gradually it became a common place thing that they had a bigger day every day.
Right, right, where you could follow each and every game, huh?
Well, there was not a demand because only few people had radios. I remember Bertrand, this Mr. Pellet. And he couldn't hardly write his name, but as far as making money, he turned everything into gold. He was a rich man when he died. And Mr. Willingham, who sold the beans, if the price went down during the day, he would also put his beans down. Well, one morning, Mr. Pellet noticed that the beans were $10. Now there are 16, but at that day, that was high.
Mm-hmm.
And he went down to Mr. Willingham, who owns a number of beans around here. He went to him and said, now, Mr. Willingham, would you keep that price all day? He said, yes, I'll keep it all day. And then he got about four or five for all the beans that he had invested, over 1,000 bushels. And then at noon, the price went down. But Mr. Willingham had given him his word that he would give him that price all day. And so by the time he got through, he saved some like $60 on that deal, and then he bought a radio.
Oh, really?
He often told me that. And anyone that outguessed is Willingham, you know, Willingham of the Hemlock and Freeland, his elevators left on right wing, and he was a captain of the rich man.
Isn't that something?
Willingham, he was quite a fellow. During the school fight, we had a school fight here when they wanted to close our focus school.
Well, they did.
The Hamilton. Oh, yes. That's the time I was the guinea pig. They sent they wanted all the pastors to quit. They didn't have the necessary credits to teach.
Oh.
So I was supposed to have an examination in Lansing that time. And you know, they can give you an examination. So when they send my credits, and I had more credits, you know, going through Fort Wayne and St. Louis. People didn't have the education in those days that they have now. And the baroque said, if we make this man quit, we'll have to make 99% of our public school team.
Really?
And then have less credits. Yeah.
Isn't that something?
And then my cousin, his neighbor part, his mother and my mother, their sisters, father and father were brothers. He's a Dr. Bickle of Seward.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Lawrence Bickle.
Right.
Who is my cousin. And he wanted me to go to Ann Arbor in order to get stopped at Taco. How could I get away with teaching all year and teaching in summer? Mm-hmm. And I had more credits than he did.
Isn't that so?
Yes. And he wanted me to go, and of course I doubted I. He was a good stock vendor, but he was a student. I don't know if I would have made it, but I tried to. But he was a broker school teacher. He had for 3 summers. We'd get away, and he was teaching in Detroit, and then he took at Wayne.
So that originally a lot of the pastors who taught school were really, I suppose, weren't, well, what today we would call accredited, I suppose, by the state to teach them, huh?
Well, see, Ohio and Michigan has different laws. You take even this Dr. Mark over here, who's the president of the
Second of
mm-hmm. Well, he had to take credits here in Michigan yet in order to become president of Delta. I teased him.
Yeah.
My daughter-in-law over at Pates, Ohio, the harbor's wife. You Ohio people come up here, they have to go to school first to get the necessary credits.
Yeah. Michigan, I guess, was always known for its strong lab programs of education.
No, at the time it was out with preaching and teaching a full schedule. Like I say, I never took a vacation, and this would have entailed maybe 3 months Lawrence could go, Lawrence Beckel. I just heard the other day his weather is still down there.
Maybe we just turn the question around, the one we asked you before, if you have any real fond memories. Are there any kinds of memories that you don't look so happily about? Should we say, things that you weren't pleased with or satisfied with, or?
Well, I tell you, the language question entailed a number of...
Did it? What do you mean by the language question?
Well, when we parent from German and thing.
I see.
And we have meetings. One time when I asked whether I would be able to preach in the evening, and it wouldn't take anything away from the German services, and preach 6 times a year in the evening, and who wanted to come could come, and there were a few, I would preach. Have a practice, and then hit over to one fellow said, let him have his fun. Got up in the meeting.
Isn't that so?
Oh, you take it, they're outspoken people. Like Pastor Hahn over here at Bach, he had German-Russians, quite a number of them. And he was here one time, and he was a good friend of mine. He spoke about the voters' meeting, and he said, oh, he said, with a painful silence. Nobody said, give me a few of your Bavarians, at least say something. So our people, like we had meeting Monday night, we're calling a teacher and our people speaking. They want to know.
Why was this? Why did people not want to use English? Why did they so much want the German language?
It was in the tradition of that day and age, and with some people, the German was more important than the religion. Mm-hmm. See, that's something I could have mentioned there in the beginning. Some people, they thought you can be saved without knowing German.
Isn't that
that? Well, as I said, they were tyrants. They were for themselves. And here was Moniker, and here was Frank and List, and all Germans. Mm-hmm. Here and there, they did business. They went to the bank and got their money, and they had a talk English outside of that.
It was always
And when I had to know, I was counselor for a number of years. And then at that time, the Timberline, the Midland Circuit, was all Bay City. I had the largest circuit in the Michigan District. And then I had a number of meetings there. I could tell you stories. Frank and Wilson. We had people, old people, Mr. Schwab, Mr. Siegel, Mr. Arnold, Mr. Humboldt, all sitting in there. And then I would give the different candidates. And the first question that the man would ask, kann er auf Deutsch? Does he know German?
Yeah. So the language became more important than anything else. Well, Pastor Bickel, we were happy that we could have this interview with you in this afternoon. I'm sorry that our tape is almost to an end. I'm sure there's many other questions that we could ask and would like to ask you. We appreciate the time that you've given us and the opportunity for us to sit in your living room and just kind of reminisce about your early life. Thank you.